From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. In the Philippines, plows clear the rainforest to make room for humans. In South Asia, farmers treat their livestock with an anti-inflammatory drug. In the Arctic, temperatures are slowly warming. And in Idaho, invasive cheatgrass is crowding out sagebrush. These activities have one significant connection. They're killing raptors in all corners of the globe. More than half of all raptor species are seeing their numbers fall, and 20% of them now face extinction. Now, the loss of these birds can be devastating to ecosystems, and they are an indicator of larger environmental issues all around the world. Dr. Chris McClure is the Executive Vice President of Science and Conservation at the Peregrine Fund, and he's planning to talk about the state of raptors around the world next week at the Boise Library at Hillcrest. And he's joining us now for a preview of that. Welcome back to the program, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So how are raptors doing worldwide?
Overall, not great. There are, just for context, there are 561 species of raptors globally. 20%, as you mentioned, are threatened with extinction. That's 113 species of raptors that are threatened. And then 56% are declining. That's 316 species around the globe. And it's mostly because of two things. There are there's habitat destruction going on. So it's mostly forest habitats. Most raptors are forest-dwelling species, especially in the tropics, and it's habitat destruction due to logging and agriculture. And then the other reason, particularly for vultures and other scavengers, is poisoning. There's various forms of poisoning going on, particularly in Africa and Southeast Asia.
Can we talk a little bit more about that then? Because as you said, I mean, they're at the point where they're critically endangered in parts of Africa and Asia right now.
That's right.
So where's this chemical poisoning coming from? I mean, why is this happening?
Yeah, well, there's two concurrent continental vulture crises happening. There's one in Asia and there's one in Africa. The one in Asia has actually been going on since the late 90s, early 2000s, when an anti-inflammatory drug called diclofenac was being used for veterinary use. So cows are very revered in India. Very few cows actually get eaten, but there's a lot of cows there. And those cows end up living to old age and getting old age aches and pains, and people would give this anti-inflammatory drug, diclofenac, to their cows to ease their arthritis, basically. Now, that it turns out that drug is very poisonous to vultures. So the cows would die, and then the vultures would come in and eat the basically poisoned meat from the cows. And it was actually scientists with the Peregrine Fund and our collaborators that figured this out in 2006. And so we got the governments of Pakistan, Nepal, and India to come to a summit and actually agree to ban diclofenac as a veterinary drug in 2006. The populations have stabilized, but they haven't quite bounced back yet because these are such long-lived species. They only hatch one young every other year. So it takes a long time for those populations to come back. So that's Yeah, so that's the problem in Southeast Asia. Then there's Africa. In Africa, there are a couple different kinds of poisonings going on. One is called predator poisoning. So there's a lot of herding that goes on in Africa, and there's a lot of big predators out there like lions and hyenas. And so a lion will kill livestock, and the pastoralists will retaliate and poison the lion or poison livestock, so the lions will then get poisoned. Well, vultures will come in and either eat the poisoned livestock or the poisoned lion. And so it's they aren't meaning to kill vultures, but the vultures end up being collateral damage, basically. And then there's one other way. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought. My apologies.
Sure. There's one other way that vultures get poisoned, and it's called sentinel poison. So poachers of elephant tusks and rhino horns will poison the carcasses of their victims to keep vultures from circling overhead and alerting the authorities to the crime scene.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. So that probably is not going away anytime soon. What about the first poisoning that you mentioned? Are African, you know, government officials wanting to do anything to help with that? Or is this potentially going to be ongoing issues in Africa?
Well, actually, the Peregrine Fund and our partners are working very hard to do outreach in Africa, particularly in Kenya. Kenya's one of the most important countries in the world for raptor conservation, particularly this poisoning. And so our intrepid biologists are out there informing the local people to not poison vultures and informing them of the importance of these birds to the health of the ecosystem.
So my understanding is that there is also a big issue facing raptors around the world, and this is wind turbines.
That's right.
So just one turbine has the ability to kill thousands of birds who fly into them. So Chris, I'm assuming you're working on a way to help with this, but can you talk about what you're doing and how effective this is? And also, what are energy companies saying about this?
Yeah, it's a pretty sticky issue because, wind power is a, it's an important part of a portfolio of renewable energy, but it needs to be done well. And so we call it the mitigation hierarchy. There are different ways to mitigate the effects of wind collisions from wind turbines. The first thing you want to do is make sure you don't put the wind turbine up in a bad spot. So don't put it where a bunch of birds are going to fly through and get killed. The second thing you can do is if you have inadvertently put up a wind turbine in a bad spot, you can shut it down if a bird during certain times of day or if a bird happens to be coming its way. And that's one of the ways that the Peregrine Fund is working to make wind power safer for birds. So we've partnered with a group. We've been testing a machine called Identiflight. And this is basically a camera system that uses artificial intelligence, or AI, and it's continuously scanning the skies for eagles. And if it spots something flying, it can tell whether or not it's an eagle, or it tries to tell at least. And then it can tell the trajectory of the bird and shut down the wind turbine if it thinks the bird is going to fly through the area. So we tested this at a wind power facility in Wyoming, and it dropped the number of eagle fatalities by 80% compared to a control site. So that seems to be a pretty good way of mitigating, at least for eagle mortality.
Okay, so we've talked about raptors having to face issues like climate change, poisoning, loss of habitat. In your opinion, Chris, what is the biggest threat to these birds right now?
The biggest threats are definitely habitat destruction in the tropics due to agriculture and logging, and then poisoning across Africa and Southeast Asia.
And so what is being done then to try to combat that?
Yeah, so the Peregrine Fund and our partners are working. We do what's called community-based conservation to combat habitat destruction, particularly in Madagascar and Panama. So in Madagascar, we actually work with local people to help them set their deforestation rates, so their harvest of timber, and their fishing regulations, and we help them to enforce those regulations. And we're doing the same thing in the Darien Gap in Panama, and we're working with the local indigenous tribes to keep outsiders from coming in and harvesting their timber.
So can you talk a little bit about the Peregrine Fund itself? How did it get started? What is the mission of this organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we were founded by falconers, actually, in 1970. Dr. Tom Cade was our founder. He was out of Cornell University at the time. And he was worried about his favorite bird, the peregrine falcon, declining because of DDT. And he had him and his collaborators and the rest of our founders had this falconry knowledge of how to breed peregrine falcons in captivity and then release them successfully. And so he took this knowledge and put it on an industrial scale. They released about 4,000 peregrine falcons out into North America. And it said that the peregrine falcon exists in North America because of two things. One is the banning of DDT, and the other is Tom Cade and his collaborators. So from there, the peregrine falcon was delisted from the U.S. Endangered Species Act in 1999. And the Peregrine Fund has expanded our purview around the world to all 561 species of raptors. And our goal is to conserve birds of prey worldwide. We want all 561 species to have healthy populations.
So then can you also tell us about the Global Raptor Impact Network?
Absolutely. So the world changes pretty fast nowadays, and we really need to keep a finger on the pulse of raptor populations so that we can step in before before things are too late, before a species goes extinct. So with the Global Raptor Impact Network, or GRIN, as we lovingly call it, it is a network of raptor researchers around the globe monitoring and studying raptors to keep a finger on the pulse of their populations and to step in before things get too bad.
Mm-hmm. So can anybody send their data to this network?
Yeah. Anyone can. There's actually a cell phone application. It's not so much for citizen scientists, but for raptor researchers.
Okay. So let's get back to the Peregrine Fund for a moment and one of your goals. My understanding is that one of the things that the fund wants to do is try to put a raptor biologist in every country around the world. Why is that?
Well, raptors are a pretty specialized group of birds, and so it takes a bit of expertise to know how to monitor and manage their populations. And the Peregrine Fund certainly can't do it all from Boise, Idaho. So we try to spread our expertise around the globe so that people can manage their own birds in their own countries. A great example of this, of why this is so important, was actually during the Asian vulture crisis. So 9/11 happened during the Asian vulture crisis, and everything was shut down. We couldn't get biological samples in and out of Pakistan where vultures were dying by the droves. And so it was actually local biologists that took over and were able to help figure out that it was diclofenac poisoning those vultures. So it's really important to have a raptor biologist in every country, like we say.
Mm-hmm. So what can the average person, you know, someone who's not a scientist, someone who's not involved with raptors do to help their survival?
That's a great question. So there's basically three things that the average citizen or person can do. If you're a hunter, you can switch to non-lead bullets. So lead is a poison. And so if you shoot a big game animal with a lead bullet and then leave the gut pile on the landscape, vultures and scavengers like eagles can come in and get poisoned and die from eating that that carcass or that gut pile. So if you switch to non-lead, you're actually leaving a clean meal for an eagle on the landscape. You can go to the Peregrine Fund has an initiative to help hunters switch to non-lead, and you can go to nonleadpartnership.org and check that out. If you live in Idaho, you can come visit the World Center for Birds of Prey. You can learn more about how raptors are vital to the landscape and the things that you can do to help them. And then finally, anyone can be a member of the Peregrine Fund, no matter where you live. The Peregrine Fund is one of the only scientific organizations that does the science to figure out what raptors need to survive and then implements that science with boots on the ground. So we really are the one-stop shop for raptor conservation.
And before I let you go, Chris, I think we should let people know that you're actually writing a book about the state of of the world's raptors, correct?
That's kind of correct. I would say I'm more leading a book on it. What we're doing is we're dividing the world into regions, and I'm crunching the numbers on which species seem to be threatened and which ones are most important per region. And then we send those results to the local raptor biologists in those regions, and they interpret and tell me whether I'm right or wrong. And they actually end up writing a chapter in the book. So there's one chapter per region. And what we're going to do is publish those chapters online as the year progresses. And In the end, it'll be an edited volume full of these chapters.
Well, as always, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come on the program and talk with us about this.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking with Dr. Chris McClure, the Executive Vice President of Science and Conservation at the Peregrine Fund, about how birds of prey are struggling all over the world. The Golden Eagle Audubon Society is hosting his State of Raptors of the World talk on March 19th. It will be at the Boise Library at Hillcrest. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.